Two Chairs No Waiting, episode number 251, Betty Lynn Interview, part two. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the wonderful fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by weaversdepartmentstore.com, pick up a Dillard's DVD or maybe a calendar, necktie, all kinds of other stuff, DVDs, CDs. We got all kinds of stuff over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of Two Chairs No Waiting, number 251, is my wife, Jan Newsom. And thank you to the Mayberry Band. Oh, the music is always so good. 251 times that has been played is the opening theme of this show. Folks, I am Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting. If it's your first time joining us, welcome to Mayberry. We're glad to have you. And if it's your if you've been here every one of the 251, welcome to Mayberry. Thanks for being here. Thanks for coming to Mayberry and visiting and staying and just trying to live a life like Mayberry. Who doesn't want to do that? Well, last week, the podcast was about Betty Lynn, and we're going to continue that this week with part two, the final part of our Betty Lynn interview. And if you didn't hear it last week, I want to encourage you to head over to Two Chairs No Waiting, number 250, and listen to the Betty Lynn interview, part one. Now, you don't have to have listened to it before you listen to this episode, but if you'd like to stop now and pause, hey, welcome back. But if you don't want to pause, you can just keep right on playing. And folks, this is going to be good. We're going to hear again from Betty tonight. We're going to hear more about her career on things other than the Andy Griffith Show, and then hear some of her telling about Andy Griffith Show stuff. She's got a really good story about a lady who played the Wicked Witch of the West on Wizard of Oz. So just that's a teaser. Definitely stay tuned to listen to that because it is an awesome story and was so fun to hear Betty tell. Again, I want to thank Betty and the folks over at the Andy Griffith Museum. While we were there, we were able to visit with Betty in the back room there right before she came out front and started signing autographs. So drop by over at andygriffithmuseum.com and you can look at the schedule of events there and see when Betty's going to be appearing next at the Mayberry Museum or Andy Griffith Museum there in Mount Airy, North Carolina. So drop by over there and check it out. And if you will not be disappointed if you head over to the museum for a day of fun and joy. A lot of Mayberry fun there at the Andy Griffith Museum. I definitely encourage you to go there. And I want to thank them for letting me record this interview there in the back room at the Andy Griffith Museum. All right, folks, well, let's go on in here. This is part two of our interview with Betty Lynn, and I know you guys are going to enjoy it, so just sit back and hang on. So here we go.
But I also did pictures, westerns. I did all kinds of things. I wish I could count them all down for you. I can't. Well, cheaper by the dozen, though. It's so funny. Not long ago, they showed it where I live, and some of the people went down and watched it. And I guess some of them recognize me in it. I don't know how they couldn't recognize me. I mean, I am a lot older, but my coloring and everything is pretty much still the same.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't do anything to it. It's just the way God's left me. But anyhow, it was so funny. That friend of mine, I figured she fell asleep just before I came on because she said, I couldn't see you at all. I didn't see you in that. I thought, she must have fallen asleep. Woke up right after I was off. I only have a scene with Jean Crane in it and then with Clifton Webb. Yeah. But somehow or other, she couldn't tell it was me. She thought I was one of the children. And No. It was so funny.
Well,
anyhow. I did quite a few movies, then went into television. Fox dropped me after 4 years, and I started doing television. And then eventually CBS asked me to come to New York and do a live show and replace Pat Kirkland in The Egg and I. So I did that live every day. And that was a great experience. Although financially it was a big mistake. But other than that, it was really great to work with the people that were on that show, wonderful character people, and Edgar Staley and Paula Truman and Enid Markey and all these people that were so great. Doris Rich, wonderful people to work with. And Margaret Hamilton every day. Yeah, just great. And Margaret, this, I have to tell this. After I got there to do that, it was autumn. And I kept saying to the cast and crew, I'd say, anybody going to do anything for Halloween? Because I was still young enough that I really loved Halloween. And the kids would come in at, and I had my grandfather still. My grandmother had died, but my grandfather and my mother, and I would open the house and the children would come in. So I missed that. And I'd say, anybody want to do something? Everybody ignored everything. You know, I try again now and then. Anybody want to do something? No. Finally, Margaret Hamilton said, Betty, are you serious about wanting to do something? I said, yes, Margaret, I am. She said, well, I'll tell you. I'll have you over to my apartment for dinner, and I'll read you ghost stories. I said, really, Margaret? That's wonderful. So she did, and we had a nice dinner, and she had a lovely apartment there. And then she got some books out, and I sat on a stool by her feet, and she started reading ghost stories to me. And all of a sudden, it hit me. I said, oh, Margaret, I just realized something. I said, it's Halloween. I'm sitting here, and the Wicked Witch of the West is reading me ghost stories. It hadn't hit me because she played an entirely different character on the show. You know, I wasn't even thinking of that. Uh-huh. But it was so funny. I've never gotten over that.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, I know. Isn't that funny? Yeah.
That's surreal at that moment.
And Grady Sutton was on the show, too. Mm-hmm. He was like this big, soft, sweet boy, older boy, southern boy. Yeah, he was on every day. And gosh, it was great people to work with. It really was.
Wow.
John Craven played the husband, and you know, it was a wonderful cast. However, then I came back home, and I didn't know that television was something that was so horrendous that the people in movies didn't like television. And so when I had an interview, they'd say, what have you been doing, Betty? And I'd say, well, I've been doing television, live TV, and it's wonderful. I had an interview that Katharine Hepburn was seated, and I said, oh, Miss Hepburn, I think you'd love it. It's like opening night every day. And I went on, and everybody froze in the room. And I thought, well, I couldn't figure out what was wrong, but I could feel it got cold in there fast. And I finally found out later that the movie industry hated television because it was taking away from them, because people could sit home and just turn on the set. Well, I didn't know that. So I felt terrible. Nobody wanted me after I started talking about how wonderful television was. They hated me. So it took me a long time to get over all that. Eventually started working again, thank God. Uh-huh. And so I did quite a few Westerns at Warner's and all the different ones they had. I did everything they did, and I was out in the wearing all those heavy clothes in the heat of 100 degrees and more out in the valley, riding buckboards and dirty dust and everything. Yeah, but anyway, I'm grateful for all the work I had. Well, I was so grateful. Yeah,
well, you were just able to work with so many. It's amazing when you start telling about the people you work with.
Oh, I worked with a lot of wonderful actors. It's true.
You had told a story one time when we were in California. You and Bernard Fox were sitting around talking, and you talked about, I believe, Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
I taught
her a little soft shoe, yeah. That was a funny happening. Angie Blue was an assistant to Hermes Pan, the choreographer. And she called me one day, and she said, Betty, could you do me a big favor? She said, I'm not able to get there. But I had told Marilyn and Vanessa Brown that I would teach them a little soft shoe dance. She said, I taught you the dance, so could you do it for and teach them? I said, well, sure. I went over, and I did. I taught Marilyn and taught Vanessa. But Marilyn was so cute. And the fellow that was playing the piano for us, he was Latin. And she would lean over, way over, and her eyes would be half closed, and she'd talk to him and look at him. I thought he was going to fall off this piano stool. And watching that was really something. She was really so cute, but I really like Marilyn a lot, and Vanessa as well. But Vanessa didn't do as well on that dance as Marilyn did. She picked up very fast. It was very good. But I was very fond of both.
Yeah, I just thought that was a neat story. I remembered that from several years ago.
And, I know. Watching that was a scene to watch, you know, because she just talked to him, and he had a little soft voice, and he was just going, just
melting. Right?
Oh yeah, melting. Oh yeah, oh yeah. It was cute.
Oh, that's great.
It was great.
That's great. Now, one time you were telling me as well, you had made tiles.
Oh yeah.
You were
making them. I first got back and couldn't get work, I had been drawing little things all my life, so I'd drawn these little, like a little dog, a little cat, little things. And on, my mother had learned to do china painting, like the old-fashioned from the years ago in porcelain. So she said, Betty, these little things are so cute. Maybe you should try and do these on these porcelain tiles. And she said, I bet they'd be really cute. So I went ahead and did some, and she helped me with shading and different things, because you'd have to have them fired, then bring them home. We didn't have a kiln, so we'd have to go downtown, have them fired, bring them back, and then shading a little more in color. But she could help me with that, because I wouldn't have been able to do it without her, because I didn't know how to do china painting. However, I'm beginning to learn, and she was helping me. So, but I do the, drawing and everything. And so... Well, I had 8 different ones, and I had a little rocking horse, and I had a bear on it. I had a dog, a cat. I had a deer. I can't remember, but I had 8. And so she said, these are darling. I'm going to take them out and see if they'd sell. So I said, oh, Mother, I don't think they... Well, I'm going to see. I think they would. She went out with the 8 tiles. She came back and very straight face, and I said, well, she said they all bought them. It was, it was May Company and Robinson's and Bullock's Wilshire and Bullock's and Saks Fifth Avenue for the infants department. And we had little frames that were like shadow box frames. And, she got 27 orders from each one of those stores. Well, trying to do that, I'm telling you, just Mother and me and my grandfather fixed the frames with a little, like a swing nut on the back, so you could take them out and wash them and put them back and everything. Was talking about cottage industry. We were not big enough to handle all the, but finally we got it done, and they kept reordering and reordering. And then I got a job, and I was called in by Ruth Birch, who later was casting the Andy Griffith Show. But I'd done some plays as well, and Ruth had cast me in those. And I did Peg of My Heart at Laguna Playhouse. Then I did, Moon is Blue at Phoenix, Arizona, in Sombrero Playhouse. I did King of Hearts, Sombrero Playhouse. I did several plays, different ones. Then the last one I did was Come Blow Your Horn in La Jolla at the Playhouse with Howard Duff, yeah.
Wow.
And anyway, so now and then I'd work a play in, if I had time, because I really loved that. And then my mother thought I was better on stage than I was in film or anything else. But I don't know if I was or not, but I love doing them. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. You're pretty good on the Griffith Show.
I love the Griffith Show. Of all things in the world. I'm so grateful I got to be in that cast. They were all perfect, everybody in it, and to work with them, the expression in their faces and their eyes when you'd work with them, everything meant something. And a lot of times you work with people and they're blank, kind of. It comes off good somehow, but you don't feel any common, nothing with all of those people. You really felt what you were playing and everything. I just loved them. So I was so lucky.
Oh. Well, I just have so much respect for all of y'all that were on the show and just acting in general, but especially from doing Floyd. I've read the scripts.
Yeah.
And I read the scripts, and there's words on there like Bobby Gribble hates Emma Lawrence. And you guys, the actors, were able to take those words and make them have feeling and meaning. And, Floyd.
Well, you do very well, Alan.
Well, I'm impersonating, though. I can impersonate. That's different.
Yeah,
you guys made it up
to
originally.
Start with, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just so amazing.
Howard McNair. Yeah, he was great. If you listen to old-time radio, you'll hear Howard constantly. And his voice, you can't miss it. You do a great imitation. You really do.
We were listening on the drive up to Mount Airy to yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
I know. He was on everything. He was really terrific, yeah. So, but I always loved him. And his wife was so sweet. After he had the stroke, she'd be on the set quite often and all. But, well, we had wonderful, wonderful cast. There was no doubt. Uh-huh. And I loved working with Andy and Don Knotts. Couldn't have been better for me.
Is there anything in particular? I know you've been asked this 1,000 times, but is there anything in particular that was just you enjoyed, something you enjoyed doing on the Griffith Show that was one of the most fun scenes to shoot or something like that? Do you remember?
Gosh, I don't know. I always want you guys to pick out something. Yeah.
At least when it comes to mind for me.
I'm a great audience, and I love so I watch the shows all the time and love them. Yeah, but not just. What I'm on, you know, it had nothing to do with me. But the ones I loved the best were Ronnie Howard when he was little was, I think, just phenomenal. Uh-huh. I never saw anyone act like he was so natural. Mm-hmm. And you really felt, I cry under some of those. I still do, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just the sweetest thing in the world. And the relationship of Andy's character to Ron's character was so terrific. I've met young men and say, I wish my father and I had that kind of relationship. You know, it was beautifully done. Had great writers, and we had good directors, but we really had a great cast. That's what it all really came down to.
Well, the amazing thing about the show to me is that it was funny, but then there were so many touching moments.
Very
touching. Like when you and Don, Barney, and Thelma Lou were standing outside looking at the furniture in the window.
Yeah, right.
And you two were talking about how it would be,
what
kind of furniture you'd have.
Yeah,
that was.
It was touching. Yeah, it was. Well, it was kind of touching also for Thelma Lou because I felt she began to realize she wasn't being included too much all of a sudden, and that hurt. However, no.
Well, and then you were funny. I mean, the episode where Barney had bought his car.
Oh,
and you guys are driving down through there, and that thing starts coming out, and you're like, Barney!
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, they had, maybe I've told this 100 times, I'm not sure, but they had told us that we better be perfect, which we all had to be anyway at all times, but that they had set it up, and they couldn't redo it. I mean, we didn't know what they'd done. So when we started, and this thing came out like a snake, and we all broke into laughter. So we had to stop, they cut, and then had to reset it and do it again because it was a complete shock. It was funny, yeah. People often mention that show. It was funny. That was a funny, poor Barney. He was ready to go again when she, we might have another car, she said.
That's right.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, how funny. He was so funny.
Well,
it was a great show.
Amazing.
Andy and Don were so wonderful together, and they really were like brothers. Don told me that no matter where they were for the rest of their lives, they were in touch. They'd contact each other. Wow. And, you know, and Andy came out and was in the hospital with Don when he was dying. Mm-hmm. And it was really a wonderful, wonderful relationship. They were like brothers. So I'm very touched by being a part of it.
You and Don stayed in close contact.
Oh, we did. Well, and not at first. It was after we started making appearances that we really got to know each other better. Yeah. But was going to be his wife, but at that point she was his girlfriend and assisting him a lot because we realized later he had lost his vision. But he could see peripherally, that's all. But she was of great help, too, with him. Francie, darling girl. And so they got married. And anyhow, we would go to dinner. And I'd take them to a hotel for dinner, and they'd take me sometimes. And they were so sweet, so much fun. And everybody wonders. They all say, oh, he must have been a kick. He must have been so funny all the time. I'd say, no. He was a quiet man, very sweet. His mind was going all the time, I think, but he was very quiet. Nothing like Barney Fife. He was just a great actor. Yeah.
Well, I remember Andy Griffith mentioning before. He said one of his great joys coming to the set was to watch Don Knotts turn into Barney Fife.
I bet, yeah. And what he did and how he, it's true. He was, And people say, how did you keep a straight face? I said, because I'm a good actress. I'd been fired, too, I think, yeah. Wow. But he was really wonderful. He was. And Andy was, too. He was so good. He kind of had always been the comic. And he couldn't believe he suddenly was a straight man. He had renounced saying, well, what am I going to get some jokes? You know, but he was terrific in the part with Don. And he loved Don. He loved him.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I want to thank you so much for spending time with me. Is there anything else you want to say to the fans out there, or just say hi?
Well,
hi.
Hi out there. Well, anyway, I hope you get to meet Alan and his wife someday, because they're a beautiful couple, and their young son's 16 years old. I can't believe it. Yeah, that's how long I've known, long before that I've known you all. So I'm happy to do this.
Well, Betty, thank you so much again. I just appreciate it.
Oh, wow, folks. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. Betty is a treasure. I love so much being around her. I was able to, some of the pictures, if you're watching the video version of the podcast, you would have seen are me actually sitting in the back room back there recording this episode. So you can actually see as Betty was telling the stories, and I was laughing and just trying to be quiet and let her talk, because wow, does she have so many great stories. I love the story about realizing that the Wicked Witch is reading her ghost stories or horror stories there on Halloween. That was an awesome story. And then she talked about Marilyn Monroe. I mean, there's just so many things that she has done in her career and in her life. She's an amazing woman to be around. Fun to hear her tell stories. I mentioned during the podcast as I was interviewing her, I mentioned Bernard Fox, Malcolm Merriweather, you know, Dr. Bombay and Bewitched. I was fortunate enough to be out in California and get to go to dinner with them and then sit around as they talked about all the people they knew. And between the two of them, I believe they knew almost everybody that has ever worked in a movie. Bernard Fox, being English, he knew Peter Sellers, and I mean, I just can't, I'm not even going to try, but to sit with them and be able to hear these stories, I wish I had had a recorder at the time and they would have let me recorded it, because it's something I wish I could remember. I can't remember all the stuff. I just remember sitting there being in awe of being in the presence of these guys and hearing their stories. And I hope you got a little bit about that from Betty and just her wonderful stories about her career, both on the Andy Griffith Show and well before that, as she went on USO trips, as we heard in the previous episode, all the way up through now. So folks, hey, I hope you've enjoyed it. The episode, make sure you go back and listen to number 250 as well as this episode if you haven't yet. And, folks, I would love to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-684-8415 and let me know what you thought about the episode, what you think about Betty. She's the cats, by the way. You can also email me at floyd@imaberry.com. You can drop by twochairsnowaiting.com and leave messages on any of the shows. There's comments filled at the bottom of every episode. So drop by there and leave me a message. Or if you're on Facebook, you can drop by facebook.com/twochairs and leave me a message there as well. So, folks, thanks again for joining me here in Mayberry, and we'll see you guys next week on Two Chairs No Waiting. Good night, everybody.